coming up next. Minding Your Business with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
Penguin is Google's codename for their search algorithm update, which went live April 24th. The new formula is Google's latest attempt to demote websites that violate their webmaster guidelines. So-called black hat SEO techniques like keyword stuffing, cloaking, link schemes, and deliberate creation of duplicate content are just some of the ways these sites break the rules. Here's an example of a linking scheme that occurred in January 2011, as explained by Marianne Sweeney, who we'll be hearing more from later in the program.
JCPenney's was found out to have been using a search firm that, according to search engine experts, employed the most egregious form of link building or link spam that they have seen. Basically, what was happening is entities in India, say, or the Philippines, Vietnam, individuals there are employed at a low salary to go out and basically put a link to your site anywhere on the web. I mean, it could be on an auto parts directory. It could be in the bottom of some article on basket weaving. It could be on a website about cat furniture. So Penny's was able to achieve high ranking for single-term phrases like bedding because they had hundreds of thousands of meaningless links from sites pointing to them.
That clip was from January 28, 2012. You can get the complete interview at mybmedia.com. Google Penguin was created to put web spam in check. The name, according to a post by Todd Bailey of Search Engine Guide, compares the algorithm's ability to detect spam with a penguin's sense of smell. By Google's estimates, Penguin affects about 3% of searches done in English, German, Chinese, and Arabic, and an even bigger percentage in highly spammed languages. Before Penguin, there was Panda, which first appeared in February of last year. Panda was about demoting websites that provided a poor user experience. The name came from the algorithm's creator, Navneet Panda. It took into account human interactions, for example, in one's social networks. Once again, here's Marianne.
Machines are very logical. You know, this is relevant because it fits a set of criteria, yes, no, yes, no. But we are not logical. We're squishy. We're emotional. We're influenced by outside events. We're influenced by where we're looking. We're influenced by the emotional state. We drive them crazy because we have words that, a single word that means multiple things. A dog can be a bad bet. It's a bounty hunter in Hawaii. There are search engines don't understand this. The level of complexity to generate the type of results we're seeing is commendable. However, there's always the opportunity to bring in what are actual people. And that is what Google has been trying to do. And they are now accelerating with the incorporation of Google Plus information into your actual search results.
In January 2012, Google released a page layout update which targeted websites with little content above the fold. The whole point of all these updates is to display higher quality websites at the top of search results, the logic being that searchers will be more likely to find what they are looking for and therefore continue to use Google for search, which in turn supports Google's advertising revenue model. On today's show, we'll be hearing from our guest, Marianne Sweeney, about what you need to do now to stay on top of Google search. Minding Your Business is about delivering the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. It's reality radio for entrepreneurs. If you've got questions for my guest, call 866-712-1300 anytime during the program or tweet us at MYBmedia.
I don't go for fancy cars.
Oh, no, no.
For diamond rings or movie stars.
No, no, no.
I go for Penguin. Oh, Lord, I go for Penguin. Cause penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive.
We have search engine expert Marion Sweeney back here with us in the studio today to talk about Google's latest changes to their algorithm. Since we last spoke with her, Marion has become a search strategist at Portent Interactive. She's a certified Google AdWords professional and member of the Google Engage program. And she's been in the business since 1998 and here with us to share her thoughts on what you need to be doing now to drive traffic to your website. Marion, welcome back to Minding Your Business.
Thanks so much for having me, Robin. I hope you had a great Fourth.
Oh, it was excellent, and today the weather is even better.
I know.
We had talked about this in our first interview from January 28th, but can you remind us of the key components that make up a search algorithm?
So search algorithms are mathematical instructions to the engine itself, to the software, to perform a specific set of calculations. Many people think that Google has a defining algorithm, PageRank. There's that one instruction to count links or to order results in a certain way. But in actuality, Google is using at last count well over 200 instructions. So search engines all start out with the fundamental foundation of operation, and that is you have a utility or a program that will go out and crawl content. And then you have a portion of the software that breaks the content into chunks that are assigned identifiers. You have these identifiers then stored in a specific type of database where it can be retrieved. And you have the box that enters. So you go to Google, you give your query. Google goes to this index that represents the words on the page and says, where can I find these query terms? I'm going to pull those pages, and then I'm going to sort them in a way that makes sense so that I can tell you which one I think is more relevant for what you're looking for. All of that is driven by separate algorithms. Now, Google is operating under a set of algorithms that say, we're going to collect what we consider to be the logical results, and we are now going to apply algorithms that are based more on human factors than on mathematical factors. And those human factors are click-through, bounce rate, and conversion. So if I could describe Panda in three words, it would be click-through, bounce rate, and conversion. The search engine, in its blind, mathematically agnostic way, takes your query, breaks it down, goes to the cupboard, pulls all the pages, puts them in a pile, sorts them in a way that the algorithm tells it to, and presents them to you. If nobody clicks on your result, you are obviously not relevant. Boom, you're out. If they click on you, but they go to your page, the page that was presented as relevant, and they do nothing, meaning they look at it and they say, this isn't what I want, and leave, you're not relevant, you won't be in the search results for wrong.
And that's bounce.
That's the bounce rate. So the Google engineer who developed this refers to it as the sexiest metric. And the bounce rate really represents the percentage of people. I know, don't you love Google engineers, sexy metrics? Like if there were two more mutually exclusive terms in the English language, those would be the two.
That's my new favorite oxymoron.
Yes, exactly. So, and then the bounce rate represents the percentage of people that came to your page, barfed, and left. Click-through conversion means I do not return to the search results. That whatever my query was, whatever my information need was, your page resolved it. And now I either move further into the web or I go back to the search results and I look up the Mariner's box score.
What about conversion?
That is conversion. That means that you converted me, you satisfied my need, my search need. I go to a search engine, I have an information need, you fulfilled it. That in the search world, that would count as the conversion.
So that's very different than conversion on a website itself where someone actually buys something.
Somewhat. Or for some people, you know, and some of the clients that I'm working with, conversion is that you stay on the site for a certain amount of time, that you go to a certain page. Conversion really is in a much broader sense says, I have an action in mind that I want you to do and you do that. And for the search engine, it's almost a negative action. It's my idea as a search engine of a conversion is you came to me with an information need and I satisfied that need. And my signal of satisfaction is that you do not repeat the search, you don't click on another search result, or you don't refine your search query to say, no, no, you idiot, I really meant this instead.
So what is it on a website that you have to place in order to improve this click rate, bounce rate, conversion?
So a couple of things that I advise my clients is, one, and especially in the new world order of penguins and pandas and whatever, birds and bears, is that you be about something. Most people think, I want to be number one for Google on, you know, betting. That's not a logical choice, and you wouldn't want to be there anyway because betting is too general of a term. Be specific about what it is that you're representing, what it is you're selling, and realistic about the type of individuals that are going to come and engage with your product or service. And then represent that product and service in a clear manner on your website. So when I start with clients as a private consultant and now at Portent, what we do is we engage with the client and put together what we call a keyword map that is, in a sense, a set of terms that the client wants to place for, that they want high visibility for, that represents their product and service. And we take those seed terms and expand them into related terms and concepts. When I was in private practice, I referred to this as core metadata. So you don't want to boil the ocean. You don't want to be relevant for every query. You want to be relevant for queries for the people that are looking for what you have and for term phrases that you may not think of. And that's where keyword research comes in.
How many keywords should be on that list or in that map?
Realistically, and it's not carved in stone, we're not talking Mount Rushmore or the Ten Commandments. So initially, you know, I'd like to start out with, I would say, 15 to 30. And from there, the list will grow and migrate. And once you establish a position against a certain key term, you no longer want to optimize for that. Or if you add to your product suite or your service suite, you would want to make additions and corrections to your keyword list.
Is there a reason to prioritize that list?
I think in terms of existing content, you would start there and say, you know, what is it that we can, which are the term phrases that you want to place for where you have content to support that? How is it that we can improve this content so that the search engine, remember, the machine, ones and O's, following instructions, figures out that you are relevant for searches on that product and service.
My guest today is Marion Sweeney of Portent Interactive, and we've been talking about
bears and birds.
Bears and birds. Search engines, what you need to put on your website. We got into the keyword thing. If you have questions, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We will be back after the break. Our show today is all about search engine optimization and the latest changes to Google. And we're here with my guest, Marion Sweeney of Portent Interactive.
Great to be here.
I'm still glad you're here. And you didn't run out into the sunshine and, you know, go crazy at Seattle Center at the fountain. I'll have to save that for later.
Right? I know. Church attendance is way up in Seattle. It's the end of the world.
Oh, yeah. As we know it.
It's coming, yes.
I think REM kind of said that a long time ago. Why do you say that?
Just because sun in Seattle, you know, it's got to be the end of the world. A nice 4th of July. We'll pay for that later.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We probably will. but in the meantime, we're stuck in front of our web screens, our websites, wondering how we can get Google to pay attention to us. We live in a very strange world today, don't we? I mean,
it's
what
true.
We pay attention to seems somewhat trivial in a way, but has a huge impact.
When I worked at Microsoft, we had a joke that said software is the only product that you buy knowing that it's broken, and then they charge you to fix it. So
even Microsoft said that.
Yeah. Wow. Well, no, the employees, the Microsoft people didn't say it. And by the way, I have yet to read the Vanity Fair article on Steve Ballmer coming out, which is evidently quite incendiary. So we'll all want to watch that.
I can't wait to read that.
It is extraordinary to me, especially with regard to search engines, that we allow a product to dictate to us the way that search engines dictate to us, that we have signed over complete trust in that the search engine's capacity to be unbiased, to be fair, to present honest information with every good intention. And I'm not saying that search engines are evil, but Google's good intention is to make money for Google. And along the way, they do some good things. But let us never forget that, like anything else, Bing and Google are in it to make a profit, and they do in many ways.
And their formulas are written by them.
Exactly right, and they dictate. They tell us what is relevant for our queries. So when, you know, something like Panda comes along, and now, you know, the Penguin update, the idea that Google is offended that certain individuals or entities are manipulating their search results, well, you kind of manipulate your search results too. So what it's really about is we don't want you to do something that we want to do ourselves for reasons that we're not sharing.
One thing I noticed too is that when you are literally signed into your Google account, if you indeed have one, your search results are manipulated even more.
Oh, exactly. And not only that, this speaks to, for me, a terrifying issue, and that is the personalization of search. And again, they do it much like the TSA frisks at the airport. You know, we're doing this for your good, but in actuality, Google is doing it for their own good. Both Larry Page and Sergey Brin, when they were PhD students at Stanford, were students in data mining. And so Google collects an enormous amount of data on you. And they do it in two ways, implicit and explicit. Explicit is you download the Google toolbar and you knowingly allow Google to track you wherever you go and associate what you do with your account or profile. In the hopes that they will tailor search results to not only what you implicitly say, I don't like this site, I do like this site, by what you bookmark, but also by the manner in which you interact with sites and what you do. Then there is this sort of not so explicit way that Google tracks what you do, the queries that you make, and the choices that you make and what you buy and where you go on the web, whether it's through the search results or whether it's through Google Analytics. Don't forget that Google Analytics is running on a number of sites. And Google is not entirely forthcoming about how and what they do with that data. And quite frankly, nobody's read the terms of agreement anyway. So we could sign away absolutely all of the right to use our personal data. For their,
especially the one that they came out with, the new user agreement they came out with last year, I think.
Right, which was a little more clear in the sense that they say we won't share it with other people. Less clear is it's not that we won't use it within our own uses, whether it's for Google AdWords or whether it's to refine algorithms or promote certain sites over others. There is an excellent book on this subject written by Eli Pariser called The Filter Bubble. It's not specific to Google, but it's really about sort of data personalization and, if nothing else, being aware. So my data hygiene is I run a utility cleaner that you can get free off the web called CC Cleaner. I run that frequently throughout the day. That clears all cookies, all temporary internet files.
Is that Mac and PC?
Yes. I do not. I'm very careful about what searching I do when logged into my Google account. If you are not logged into your Google account, your activity is then assigned to your location. So they'll say, this person looking up about information architecture is somewhere in Seattle. The IP address is associated with Seattle.
We're here with Marianne Sweeney of Porton Interactive, and our show today is all about SEO, digital marketing, and more. And you're listening to Minding Your Business. we know that they're saying that we're not using the data. I mean, they're not selling the data. They're not distributing the data.
Oh, they use it all the time.
But they use it to deliver ads that are relevant.
They do that. They certainly do that. And they have become much more involved in the serving of ads. It used to be that the AdWords positioning in the right column was based strictly on an auction, and the highest bidder could win. And Google soon realized, and Bing too, that the relevance of the ad to the query influenced the amount of revenue the ad generated. And so they have become much more strict about what Google calls the ad quality score, which is based on how relevant is your ad text to the query and the ad text to the landing page, to where you take the customer when they click on the ad. And if I had a number one mistake that most small businesses make when they run Google AdWords campaigns, is they send all of the traffic to the homepage. So I'm talking about how my very specific tennis shoes will promote bunion-free running forever, and I send you to my homepage, which talks about athletic equipment. One, you're going to pay more for that ad placement, and two, the customer is going to go there and say, I just wanted to fix my bunions, I'm out of here. I barf and I leave. So that is going to have a negative influence on your campaign. So if you can, try and create a very specific landing page for your ad campaigns. And if you can't do that, take them to the most specific page for that particular product.
Like a section in your catalog that's for hurting feet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Bing, are they doing similar things to what Google is doing, changing their algorithm?
All the time. And it's very interesting to me because Google got very angry with Bing last year because they found out that Bing had hired, a bunch of thought processing bipeds to come in and sit in a room and evaluate with human cognition search results. So they would do a search on Bing, and they would do the same search on Google, and they would say, wow, Google has this other result, and I'm a human being, and I look at that result, and I do think it's more relevant, so I'm going to tell Bing that they should promote it. Well, Google was horrified by that and outed Bing in a terrible way and said that that was bad, and then promptly started doing it themselves. So they have, in point of fact, filed patents that talk about human evaluators being able to influence search results then for the general web.
Do they actually have human evaluators?
Oh, yes. Yes. There are ads. In fact, I actually answered one the early part of this year because it was just too good to pass up. And needless to say, I didn't get a call. But Lionsbridge, I think, was one of the tech employment agencies that was looking for human evaluators. You could work from home. And I think the hourly fee depended on like how many search results or how many searches you did. It was whatever. It was like $15 an hour, but you got to say that you were doing great things to make Google even better, and you got to work from your home, and you literally ran searches until your eyes bled and you had to back away from the computer.
I've done that myself, actually.
Yes.
That's kind of like Amazon's Mechanical Turk.
A little bit. It's very much a little bit. And Google certainly did this with Panda. So with Panda, they not only developed algorithms about, you know, how many people are clicking and how long do they stay and what they do, but they also created usability labs within the Googleplex, and they brought people in and watched them interact with search results.
In a way, they keep trying to make the computer the human. But they kind of ran out, so they had to have the human, actually.
A little bit. You know, as I was driving over here, I was thinking about that great Twilight Zone where the aliens come and they're really nice and they're going to help us, and they're carrying that book to serve man. And then, of course, the last line is, it's a cookbook.
I love it. My guest today is Marianne Sweeney of Portend Interactive, and we've been talking about SEO. If you have questions for my guest, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We will be back right after this. Our show today is all about SEO. And I'm here with my guest, Marianne Sweeney from Portent Interactive, talking about what you need to know about search for your business. Before the break, we were talking about Google and the idea that you can't always rely on what you learn on Google, like don't believe everything you read kind of thing. So what is it about? How much did Google make in advertising money last year?
I've heard $23 billion last year in ad revenues, and it's a fantastic model. I mean, one thing, there are many things that Google has done right, and one of the many things is the pay-per-click model, and I can only caution any small business to avoid online advertising schemes that do not provide the level of reporting and return on investment that online search advertising does.
So what you're saying is that pay-per-click can actually work for a business.
Absolutely. The beauty about pay-per-click is you set the budget, and you will never exceed that budget. You can tell Google that you only want to spend $25 a day or $25 a week, and that's all you will spend. You set how much you want to pay for each click, and that is they will not exceed that. In addition to which, Google will report exactly on not only who clicked on your ad, but did they do what you wanted them to do? Did they follow through and convert? And that will allow you to assign a value to a customer and then figure out whether or not the money that you're spending on Google is being made back by the number of customers that you're getting as a result of the ads. It is a brilliant, brilliant model.
Are there certain industries where pay-per-click works better than others? I found that for, let's say, selling books, it may not be so good, but have you seen better results for different kinds of businesses?
I think that the businesses where you can assign a specific value to a customer, so, you know, like car buying, if you click on the ad, there are car agencies that say, if we can get the person to the page, then, you know, we'll make, if we can get 100 people there, we know that 20 of them are going to buy cars, and that means that we'll make, you know, $100,000 or however the math is.
I think that would be very hard to measure because the actual car sale doesn't happen off the website.
You know, they have this, they have all of the follow-through metrics. So remember, so much of what we do is predictive, and especially with search results, are largely based on what they call now predictive analytics. Computing power has achieved a level where they can crunch massive quantities of data and feel that they do come up with realistic numbers. But pay-per-click is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
We have a caller, by the way. Mindy.
No, really?
Yes. Hello, Mindy.
Hi. Hi, Robin.
How are you doing?
All right. It's hot in New York.
Oh,
Mindy from Long Island.
Yes. I had a question. When you log on to your account, a Gmail account, and you say that they track where you're going and you're doing your Google searches, is that also true if you have a Google Apps account? Like, I run a nonprofit, and so I'm, you know, the domain name is different than Gmail. But are they still tracking me when I'm signed on as a Google App person?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Meaning that they can associate where you go with your account, and they ostensibly do that so that they can provide you with better service, with better search results.
Yeah, I understood they did that with Gmail accounts. I didn't realize they also do it with anyone who has their domain parked at their place.
Right.
So, oh, okay.
So you're using their, you know, you're using their servers and their applications. Google,
right.
Cited that as a reason for leaving China when they famously finally left the People's Republic of China, and they indicated that was because they could no longer support an oppressive regime. In actuality, another motivating factor was that some brilliant students at a Chinese technical institute had hacked into Gmail accounts for dissidents in China. And Google was not in a position to stay in a country where their applications were not entirely secure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for calling, Mindy.
Okay. Bye.
We're here with my guest, Marian Sweeney, talking about SEO, and you're listening to Minding Your Business here on 1300 KKOL. Are people getting on board with Penguin? In other words, are businesses starting to understand what's going on with us?
So, yes, in a sense. And just before we get into that, I want to play devil's advocate for Google. There are people now who are like, what? But one of the black hat ways of SEO that had emerged over the last few years was actually getting your competitor's site banned. And the way you could do that is you could go out and post a lot of bogus or bad links and make it look like it came from them. It's sort of like when the dog blames the cat for, you know, knocking over the lamp. So in a sense, Penguin was one of many steps that Google has taken to get away from the link-based model of relevance. The term PageRank is so integrated into our world that we will never get rid of it. But PageRank, as an influencing factor for positioning in search results, has changed dramatically. As Google has said, linking is too easy to manipulate or game, and so we're going to get away from that and depend more on actual human behavior. What Penguin does is Panda focused on human experience, and now Penguin is saying, we're going to have to clean up a lot of the garbage that was left behind. And it is holding websites responsible for what they consider to be low quality or spammy links pointing to their site.
But links are still very important.
They are somewhat important in a sense, but they do not, in my world, they do not have the same influence that they used to have, that now it's really about the user engagement with your site, a contextual relationship to the search query.
So let me make sure I understand this. All the people out on the web talking about creating content in order to build links from high authority sites back to your website, that isn't as important anymore?
The content part is. What Google would say is, we do not want you to buy, ask for, acquire, blackmail, intimidate, whine, or beg for links. That links should be given organically, like Christmas. Like, I like your program, and so I'm going to link to it because I like it, because it's an endorsement. Not because you ask me to, but because I think it's worthwhile. In the perfect world that Google envisions, that's what linking is about.
So one of the things we always talk about is it's important to have a blog to keep your site fresh mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, but it's also important to comment on other people's blogs mm-hmm. on sites that have your target audience. Is that still valuable?
It is valuable, and Google would say it's valuable because you are conveying valuable information to other people. It should not be personally valuable to you because you have indicated your website as a link in your name. And in point of fact, Google stopped paying a lot of attention to those links ages ago. They were labeled, many of them, as nofollow, meaning the search engine spider was told to basically ignore the link. What the search engine spider does not ignore is the reference. So when you go and comment on a blog and use your name or the name of your show, the search engine picks that up as a, quote, social reference. And it does, in point of fact, value blogs and any sort of randomly human-generated content as being more valuable than, say, a link on a page that has a list of links to others, you know, just kind of like nothingness.
So let me get this straight.
Okay.
So if I fill out a profile mm-hmm. at a blog site mm-hmm. or I have a Discuss account and then I comment in the comment area and I mention, let's say, Minding Your Business,
right.
That's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't mention Minding Your Business in the comment and I make some other kind of general comment, but I have a link back to my website for my name and people click on that, is that still valuable?
It is not valuable because the spider doesn't follow the link, so the search engine doesn't make a note of it. What may be of limited value is, again, the mention or the reference.
What happens if somebody actually clicks, though, on my name that's in the profile based on what they read there?
If they follow the link, I think that would absolutely be valuable because it would be sending traffic to your site.
So that hasn't changed.
Just the spider wouldn't go through.
Right. Mm-hmm. That still hasn't changed. No. It's still getting counted. It's still valuable for people. So the stuff in Panda, all the social linking and the connecting is still relevant.
Oh, yes.
And then Penguin sits on top of that. Mm-hmm.
So Penguin is about links. So Penguin is about all of you people that subscribe to link building, where you either had a firm like a fly-by-night SEO Inc. that went out and link bombed a bunch of blogs that point to your site. You need to go take care of those. And there are a couple of ways that you need to take care of them. One is you need to either contact the site and ask them to take the link down. And if they won't, then you need to make a list of the links and present them to Google and say, we tried to have these removed, and it wouldn't happen. The first thing would be to make sure that you have actually been hit by Penguin. Remember that, you know, we live in a web that has over a trillion pages. And as smart as Google is, they aren't that pervasive.
So how do you know you've been hit?
Well, I, you know, have a list of terms, and I pretty much know where I place within that list. One way to check is you should always be placing within the top third for your brand.
So in the top what?
Top third. So the top three results. So you should be able to go, I should be able to go to Google and type in Marianne Sweeney, and if I'm not in the top three, you know, what my
three
website
pages or three,
the three results, then there might be something wrong, especially if I was there before.
So this is typing in your own name
or your brand
or
the
your
name of your website.
Name. Mm-hmm. Company name, website,
exactly.
Brand.
Right.
You want to show up in the top three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that tells you what exactly?
That should tell you whether or not if you've been hit by the Penguin. If you were there before and you're not there anymore, Google may say, you know what, you have too many spammy links. The other thing is, again, we're signing over a lot of information, but every small business should have a webmaster account, both with Google and with Bing, because you will find out the links that the search engine has assigned to you.
I understand quickly, Google has some forms you can fill out if you feel you've been hit.
Reinclusion. They have it's called a reinclusion request. So if you feel that you have been unfairly brought out, then you can ask to be put back in the results.
My guest today is Marianne Sweeney of Porton Interactive, and we've been talking about SEO and Google and Penguin and all lions and tigers and bears, oh my. And if you have any questions for us, give us a call at 866-712-1300. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Marianne Sweeney of Portent Interactive. Can people still game Google?
Well, there's a whole culture of individuals that make it a practice of driving Google crazy. The black hat search community is alive and well. There are a number of forums and websites where you can go and check that out. Some of them require you to pay. And if you do, you will learn things that will turn your hair white. As you can see, I once subscribed to one of them for quite some time just to learn about that world. So yes, it is possible to game the system, although it's becoming harder and harder. The search engines a long time ago were able to algorithmically determine context and now are looking at, you know, phrased-based searching and getting smarter and smarter. And as that happens, the tricks that used to work, like stuffing a page with keywords, having text the same color as the background, and now, you know, sort of stupid link building are all falling by the wayside.
Where does optimization fit in a business's overall marketing strategy?
Since I have been working with agencies, have fought long and hard that it starts at the very beginning, at the strategy end. Where do you want your customers to come from? How do you want them to find you? Meaning, how do you describe what you do? And then how do your customers articulate that? And very often it's different. and baking that into the site messaging early on. There should be a great alignment between both organic optimization and paid search campaigns, as well as any offline, whether it's print or billboards or TV or radio advertising, should all be the same.
So what percentage should small businesses focus, let's say? I know this is really pie in the sky, but what percentage of their focus should be on keeping up with search?
It's very hard to tell. I don't want to use the it depends. So I would start out with a 50-50 focus and dial down from there, and undoubtedly you will. One of the benefits of having an analytics program, and Google has an incredibly robust analytics program, is it will tell you the percentage of individuals coming to your website from search engines. And that should really tell you the value in relying on that as a strong revenue driver. Unlike many other channels, the search channel will provide you with more data because the data is easier to get. You know, somebody is listening to your radio program and they hear a product endorsed. Then they, 3 days later, go to Bartels and they buy the product. You cannot make that direct association as clearly as you can with search.
So do you think people often give too much credit to digital marketing versus some of the more analog or traditional media?
I would say that individuals are encouraged to go out on their own with digital marketing more, and that very often is the road to perdition because it's not as easy as it looks. I find with when I deal with paid clients, not through Portent, but when I had my own practice, that clients would go to Google and they'd say, okay, I'm going to spend $100 a week, and then they have this AdWord tool. And the next thing you know, they have one campaign that's running 200 keywords, which is definitely not the way to go. You want to be focused and specific. You want to have many keywords, but spread out against many ad groups and campaigns. There is a certain art to it, and there are some great self-help books out there. And there are also some great programs that will let you sort of get started until you're comfortable on your own. Portent has one for as little as $250 a month. You can enter into a PPC consulting agreement with them.
I just want to get back to just that idea of search needs to play an important role in everything you do, but there are some products that people just don't search for.
Exactly.
So how important is search then?
Well, they may not search in terms of a search engine for it, but they do rely terrifically on online information. So they rely on online information.
Let's take an extreme example, right? If you take a low-involvement product like a pack of chewing gum, do you really need to visit a website to go buy a pack of chewing gum ever?
One would hope not. And certainly people aren't, you know, looking for chewing gum online, but just about everyone else. And while you may not go to Google and say, should I or should I not buy the Trident, they have these flavors now that have like Harmony, where it's ginseng and Awake and all of that gum with herbal essence in it. You may not do that. However, if you're out and about and you want chewing gum, you will likely pull out your iPod, your iPad, or your smartphone and say, where can I get gum?
So mobile and search. Big. Tell me what you know about what's coming down with that.
There is very specific behavior associated with mobile search. So we know that people generally don't just like, I need to know what the theory of relativity is. Let me pull out my teeny-weeny little smartphone and see if I can read the Wikipedia article on the theory of relativity.
Although there are people in Seattle.
Right.
I could imagine actually doing that.
Well, a lot of these devices are argument settlers. So they will say, you know, like, who played the little sister in Meet Me in St. Louis? You know that Judy Garland movie where she sang The Boy Next Door and people are pulling out their smartphones and doing so they are argument settlers.
There are even apps like Shazam that will say, who did that song?
And that is the subject of another show. Like music retrieval and video retrieval are two very, very important and scary. How do they do that? The level of sophistication, technology sophistication. But getting back to mobile, so mobile search is about location. Mobile search is about immediacy. Mobile search is about association. I'm going to go see Spider-Man at the Majestic Bay Sushi. And it's like, where am I? And where is the closest sushi restaurant? So for mobile search, for small businesses, it's absolutely critical that you have a Google Places account and a Bing Places account, because the search engines rely on these to serve you up for very specific location-based searches.
We're coming to the end of the show, so I thought if you could share with us quickly any last-minute resources, books that you can turn people on to.
Wow. We were talking about The Filter Bubble by Eli Pariser, which is a really great indicator on privacy and data collection. I'm a big fan of Jaron Lanier's book, You Are Not a Gadget. Jaron Lanier was one of the pioneers in virtual reality in the 90s. And what I love about this book is he articulates clearly that machines, search engines, see us as a sub-process in what they do. Now, I want to repeat that. Sub-process. We, the humans, are subsidiary to what they do.
Oh, my goodness. We are approaching craziness. Looks like we're out of time, though. I'd like to thank my guest, Marianne Sweeney, for sharing her insights with us.
It was a pleasure, Robin. I really appreciate the invitation.
Great having you again. We'll have to have you come back and talk more about what's changing. Our opening music was Penguins, performed by Lyle Lovett. Tune in next week to learn how to visualize your company's success. For an archive of today's program, podcasts, links to our guest's website, or to sponsor this show, check out mybmedia.com. Let us know what you're thinking on Facebook and Twitter at MYB Media. From Money Radio, KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, Reality Radio for Entrepreneurs. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Listening to Minding Your Business with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.